Hearing.
Good morning, Chairperson.
How are you?
Doing well, thanks. How are you doing?
Yes, the time is 10 o'clock. Can we start?
Yes, Chairperson, we can start.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good morning, honorable members, our support staff, the members of the public on the platform media. Good morning. Let me take this opportunity to also greet the Deputy Minister of South African Police Services, Honorable Matale. Good morning. Good morning, DM.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning to the committee members.
Thank you. You are welcome with the whole leadership of the South African Police Services. To the meeting of the Standing Committee on Appropriation, as we are dealing with the 2020 Appropriation Bill. I'll say more about that a little bit later, but I think for now, let me just say you're all welcome and we are ready to start. Let me start with Darren. Darren, do you have any apologies?
Yes, Chairperson, we received apologies from Ms. Peters and Mr. Sheikh Imam. In addition to that, the Minister of Police also apologized. He's attending a presidential Mbizo in Mpumalanga. That's it, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Darren. Let's note those apologies. Honorable members, as I said, that we were having SEPs today. To interact with our with the committee about the 2022 Appropriation Bill. DM, perhaps let me just to make sure that we are all singing from the same hymn book. It's the first time, if I'm not mistaken, that this committee during this sixth administration, they appear they have got the interaction with SEPs. So just to make sure that we understand why we are all here. I know that in most cases you deal with the Portfolio Committee on Police. I'm sure you may be wondering, some of your members, DMS, to now, where do we get in with this appropriation bill? But let me just start there. The Minister of Finance, when he presents the budget in February, there are a few bills that he also presents on that day. Amongst them is the Fiscal Framework Bill, the Division of Revenue Bill, and then is the Appropriation Bill. So the budget, it's a proposal by the executive to Parliament. Because it only becomes money that you can use and so on once it has been passed by the three houses of Parliament and signed by the President. So when those bills are presented before Parliament, they are taken to different committees. In particular, at the National Assembly, it's the Standing Committee on Finance, which deals with what we call fiscal framework, which basically is about, this is the money that we are going to spend this year as the whole government. This is how much that we are going to raise from SARS, and that's how much that we are going to borrow. Then basically give the fiscal framework. That is the outline within which other bills must operate. And that's being dealt by the Standing Committee on Finance, which is chaired by Honorable Maswanganya. From there, then this committee, Standing Committee on Appropriations, take over. And we deal with, firstly, the Division of Revenue Bill, which is a bill which divides the national rate revenue amongst the three spheres of government. And once we're done with that, we recommend to Parliament, to National Assembly, that it should be adopted with or without any amendments. Once that's done, then we start with Appropriation Bill. The Appropriation Bill is then the bill which divides related to the national sphere of government. So that's the bill that we are dealing with. So we then, in that process, do a number of things, but deal with certain departments before 21 votes. We deal with them, but we, as you can see, that we have got time constraints, so we don't call all of them. So perhaps that explains why you haven't had an interaction with your department DM. Not that it's because of you playing a lesser role in the society. There are many other departments that we haven't seen, but the committee then decided that let's interact with selves, hence the letter that we sent to the good selves, and exactly saying the things that would like you to interact, to brief us on about that part of the appropriation which would be going to SEPs. So that's I thought, let me give you that background, since this is our first interaction. You don't just now, why are we being called by SCOA today? No, it's in our process. We go through that process. Then, but another thing is that we don't just end with the allocation of money. We also follow the money. We want that the money is being used for what it's intended for, but more than anything else, that the national objectives of government are being met by the resources that we appropriate as parliament. So again, that becomes our interest. Hence, you'll find us going to different places to also play an oversight function and also have these types of meetings. DM, with that introduction, I'll just say perhaps the house rules. When one is talking, we request that the video must be on, but the rest of us then will have our videos and our mics being muted, and so that we allow the presenter to be the one who's on the platform. With those few words, I'll request, I'll take the meeting to the Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister, you have got about 45 to an hour, maximum an hour. you don't need to take all that for the presentation. And after that, the oral members will interact with the presentation, then make comments, then also ask questions. And after that, again, once they've done that, well, once you have finished with your presentation, the meeting comes back to me, and then I allow the oral members to interact with the presentation. They'll ask questions, and only after all of them have asked the questions, I'll then go come back to you, Honorable Deputy Minister, to respond to the issues that would have been raised by the honorable members. I think that's how we're going to move today. And Deputy Minister, the meeting is yours. You decide when will request the meeting back to us once SEL is finished with their presentation. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee. And thanks for outlining why we are here. I must confirm, Chair, that we didn't question why we are being invited to come and account to Parliament through this committee, because we are accounting to the people of South Africa. So we fully understand and appreciate the role that you play. And I must say, Chair, that it might not be the first that we are visiting you. We think we have been here, me in particular, with some of our colleagues from the South African Police Service. So we appreciate the role that you are playing. And we came here with a delegation that excluded the minister who is having other commitments. And I think you might have received his apology. So today I'm leading the delegation together with the National Commissioner, Lieutenant General Masemola. I want to demote him now, and it's not appropriate. because he has now been elevated to be a general without prefixes, who is head of the police, and I think he's appearing before you for the first time since his appointment as a national commissioner. Together with him is General Libia, who is head of the Hawks, and the Deputy National Commissioner, Detective Njinga, and the Acting Deputy National Commissioner Support Services, Lieutenant General Khan, and our CFO, General Limpani, and divisional heads of the different divisions within the South African Police Service and component heads that are here. This is the team that we are with. And through your chair, I will request that we allow General Masemola and the team to lead in the presentation today. He will then request those who will do the presentation that he is with. He did indicate that General Limpani, our CFO, she has flu, and as a result, her voice is not that good. Then we'll allow the relevant person to do the presentation, but General Masemola will make those indications. As you have said, Chair, that you have handed over the meeting to ourselves, so we'll do the presentation. As soon as we conclude, we'll then take back the processes back to you. I will then request General Masemola to lead with the presentation. Over to you, General Masemola.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson of the committee and the Honorable members of the committee, the Deputy Minister and my colleagues. The presentation today will be taken forward, as the Deputy Minister have mentioned, that General Limpani will come in now and then, but she's not as healthy. So Major General Ravi will take us through the presentation, Honorable Chairperson. General Ravi, you can proceed. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, our Honorable Deputy Minister and Honorable Members of the Committee, my National Commissioner and the Head of DPCI. Honorable Chair, I will be doing the presentation on behalf of the CFO, as it is indicated by the National Commissioner. And we will deal with the presentation in two parts, just briefly touching on the purpose of the presentation, and then taking the committee through the 2022 MTF allocations and the matters that has been raised by the committee. In slide three, Honorable Chair, without wasting time, we have basically captured the issues that the committee wants the South African Police Service to respond to, including the service delivery implications, how we are planning to spend the proposed allocation in terms of to rejuvenate and improve policing capacity, etc. So, but what I will do, Honorable Chair, as I continue, I will introduce each one of these topics individually. We have also, in addition to the original request, Honorable Chair, there were additional requests in terms of the underspending that we need to explain the contribution of SAPS to the South African Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, the legal impediments to impacting on our ability to achieve economic transformation, etc. So, but as I continue, I'll touch on each one of them. Chair, on slide six, the medium-term expenditure framework, the allocation, if we are going to focus on the current financial year, on each one of the slides, Chair will note that we will be covering the MTF period, 22-23 to 24-25. But for the purpose of the presentation, I will focus on the 22-23 financial year. The initial indicative allocation for the department was set at 96.857 billion. If we take into account the baseline increases that primarily focuses on the compensation of employees in the 22-23 financial year, that amounts to 3.8 billion. That includes the 2.8 billion allocation in terms of the PSCBC agreement, one of 2021, the carry through associated with that, and then also a 969 million that relates to the additional investments, etc. And that brings the total budget to 100,695 million in the 22-23 financial year. The next portion, Honourable Chair, if we then move to the spending trends over the MTF, the previous MTF periods, as well as the upcoming ones. Now, what we have done as a department for the purpose of doing a more accurate assessment of the annual growth, we have excluded certain once-off allocations as it is explained at the bottom of the slide. For instance, the COVID-19 special funding in 2021, the 2021-22 once-off PSCBC allocation, etc. So those have been excluded in this comparison. Now, in the previous MTF periods, if we look at the period 18-19 to 21-22, the annual average growth was calculated at 22.2% as far as the budget is concerned. In the upcoming MTF period, where it increases from 97.827 billion to 104.373 billion, that represents an average annual growth of 2.7%. The total period taken into consideration, it amounts to an annual growth of 2.5%. If we look at the respective programs of SAPS, and again, Chair, I will just focus on the current financial year. In SAPS, we have five financial programs: administration, visible policing, detective service, crime intelligence, protection and security services. And how the 100.695 billion was allocated and distributed between these financial programs. Administration, 20.361 billion, that is 20.2% of the budget. Visible policing, 51.716 billion, that is 51.5% of the allocated budget. Detective service, 20.76 billion, that represents 20.5%. Crime intelligence, 4.362 billion, that represents 4.3% of the budget, and Protection and Security Services Program 5, 3.496 billion, that represents 3.5% of the total budget. The average growth without going, Honorable Chair, into the specific programs is 1.3% over the period 21-22 to 24-25 average for all the respective financial programs. If we look at the distribution in terms of the economic classification, again focusing on 22-23, the 94.9% of the budget relates to the current payments. That includes 78.3% the compensation of employees. That amounts to 79.137 billion. 16.7% relates to goods and services. That is 16.736 billion. And then 1.4% or 1.259 billion transfers and subsidies, 3.6% of the budget in the current financial year, 3.562 billion relates to capital payment of capital assets. That is this in terms of two subcategories, building and other fixed structures, 961 million, and machinery and equipment, a total of 2.594 billion. Honorable Chair, if we then look at the, go into the detail of the appropriation bill and the specific matters that were raised by the committee, we will focus on the service delivery implications, the proposed the distribution of the additional 8.7 billion over the MTF period, our action plan on the 30 police stations in terms of gender-based violence, our budgetary constraints and how SAPS is strengthening its capacity in light of the various legislative changes, and how we are then intending to give effect to the national strategic plan that relates to gender-based violence and femicide. Now, Honourable Chair, in terms of the service delivery implication, as a starting point, the department has been facing substantial budget reductions that was introduced specifically as far as the compensation of employees is concerned over the MTF period, and to a certain extent also impacting on goods and services. Now, this reduced compensation of the employee baseline that was introduced in 21-22 required a reduction of plus minus 6,000 in the staff establishment up to the period 31 March 2022. Now, our departmental spending over the medium term will be in relation to the core programs of visible policing, and visible policing constitutes the budget. The provinces with the highest incidence of reported crime were prioritized for the purpose of the allocation. And as a result of the previous baseline decreases in the vote, the department was necessitated to do reprioritization in terms of specifically targeting our national competencies to allow for increasing the provincial budget allocation to the respective provinces. Chair, the compensation of employees will remain our largest driver of spending, as it currently constitutes 78% of the budget. And this provides for the remuneration costs as well as personnel numbers over the specific period. Our operational expenditure, but that includes your goods and services, transfer payments, and payments of capital assets, comprise less than 22% of the budget. So if we look at the average growth on the chair that I've presented in terms of the MTF period, the average growth does not reflect the real growth if inflation is discounted. Now, the average growth that we have presented in the previous slide is affected by an additional once off allocation in 21-22 and 22-23 that resulted in a reduced growth for the 23-24 year of the MTF. And there was also substantial budget reductions in the previous MTF, especially on the compensation of employees. However, additional funding allocated over the MTF will eliminate the estimated reduced numbers and will allow for recovery to some extent, which we will illustrate in one of the coming slides. So if we take into consideration the baseline reductions that, as we indicated, impacting primarily on the SAPS compensation budget, taking into account the post that we had in the previous financial years, in 21-22, our establishment was standing at 182,126. That was reduced in the 21-22 to 176,170, and then over the MTF period, 178,708. Now, prior to the additional allocation that we received, that figure was lower. Now, the current fixed establishment, Honorable Chair, that we are able to afford in terms of the allocation is not commensurate with the policing demand, particularly in the operational environment, taking into account your policing demands that are relating specifically to your population growth and developments in the country. The South African Police Service is a labor-intensive organization, and policing is affected. If we take the reduced staffing levels into consideration, it impacts on our core mandates in terms of the prevention and combating of crime, the general and specialized investigation of crime, the gathering of intelligence, and providing forensic and criminal support to the investigation of crime. The SAPS now, including the DPCI's ability to give full effect to its mandate, is also affected by the reduced allocation, as I have already indicated. We have several performance indicators that we measure over this period that will be affected or could be affected by the operation level in reference to contact crimes and crimes against women. Point in time, Honorable Chair, the SAPS is also not able to significantly extend our geographical footprint, and that is to improve access to services through the establishment of new police stations in those identified areas. The additional funding that has been allocated for the additional enlistments in 22-23 and 23-24 and the associated carry through in the 24-25 financial year will, however, assist the department to deal with our staffing challenges. If we look at the MTF allocation of aid to be addressed, the 2.8 76 billion was carried through of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council Agreement 1 of 21. and 5.83 billion over the MTF to rejuvenate and improve policing capacity through the appointment of police trainees and observation of those who have concluded their training in as constables. This includes, Honourable Chair, the recruitment of 12,000 new police trainees, which comprises of 7,000 for the 22-23 financial year trainees, and then 5,000 trainees for the 23-24 financial year, and then the carry-through cost that is associated with this enlistment. Now, taking into consideration the natural attrition or the losses of the department over the 2 years, and it's as approximately 5,000 losses per year, 10,000, Honourable Chair, of the 12,000 will actually be a replacement for personnel losses through that national attrition, and 2,000 of the 12,000 will then allow for stabilizing our fixed establishment or our operational capability. We focus at this point in time on entry-level appointments to ensure the optimal numbers on staff establishment, and also at the same time look at the training programs to ensure that we have sufficient numbers of trained police officials coming into the organization. The action plan, Honourable Chair, the committee asked us to deal with the 30 police stations that has been listed for the GBV as GBV hotspots in the country. Slide 17 and 18 just provides the committee with the names of the police stations that has been identified. Chair, we just want to note that this list over time, the organization needs to be aware of emerging threats, and it may be impacted, or that the list itself might be affected by new emerging threats that relates to gender-based violence. There's a total of 10 police stations in Gauteng province. Honourable Chair, I'm not going to read through all the names. In the northwest, we have one police station, Ikageng, one police station in the Free State, namely Bloemspruit, three police stations in the Eastern Cape, including Butterworth, Mthatha, and KwaZulu-Natal. Then we have seven police stations in KwaZulu-Natal, that includes Umlazi, Inanda, and KwaMashu. And we have a total of nine police stations in the Western Cape, that includes the Nyanga, Mitchells Plain, Guguletu police stations. Now, what the department has done, Honourable Chair, to address the phenomena of war crimes against women and children at these police stations, we have profiled the 30 GBV hotspots stations, and the department has come up with interventions to address the root causes or contributing factors, and at the same time to improve services to victims of crime. And that was done by December 2020. In the previous financial year, there was a pilot program initiated by the department to establish GBV desks at these 30 identified police stations, and we have made significant progress. By the end of 31 March 2022, we have established GBV desks at these police stations that we have mentioned. Going forward, the evaluation of this pilot desk will be developed. Will be conducted, and with the aim to develop guidelines for uniform implementation across the country in the current financial year, ending by December 2023. Now, this evaluation, Honourable Chair, that I've just referred to, includes the proper assessment of the resource implications and enabling at the same time the functionality of the GBV desk in order to expedite services to victims of gender-based violence. Our plan is that the report compilation and approval for the rollout plan will be concluded during the period January to March 2023. It is anticipated that the evaluation process might take a period of 3 to 6 months, and it is then highly likely that the fully rollout will only be conducted in the 23-24 financial year. We have prioritized the 30 hotspot stations for capacity building sessions for the implementation of the amendments that affect SAP's duties regarding the amended legislation impact on services to GBV victims of GBV-related crime in the current financial year. The introduction of the legislative changes place more pressure on the South African Police Service, and this is now responding to the request from the committee. What are the various budgetary implications in terms of legislative changes? And as I indicated, it places pressure on the vote police as by default, no additional funding is then allocated to implement this legislation. So as a result of that, we are required to reprioritize our existing resources as a department to facilitate implementation of legislation. As example, it is estimated that the total cost for the implementation of the criminal law amendment bill will be close to 78.480 million. If we look at the implementation of the Cybercrime Act, our estimates is taking into consideration that to implement the act fully, the department will be required to establish 52 new cybercrime units in all provinces at an estimated cost of 102 million. And we will also have to make provision for the requirements that relates to technology to address cybercrime and the associated requirements. So just a breakdown in terms of the Criminal Law Amendment Bill. The DNA Act will take buccal samples from offenders on parole or under supervision by a court for Schedule 8 offenses, and the cost associated with that amounts to 78.4 million. And if we just look at the breakdown in terms of what the spending will include in terms of your teams to collect the samples, 75,000, the arrangements for training, 885,000, the acquisition of buccal samples, 24.2 million, the acquisition of fingerprint forms and ink pads, 50,000, and analysis of buccal samples, 53.2 million. That gives you a total of 78.48 million. If we do the same analysis, Honorable Chair, as far as the Cybercrime Act is concerned, just highlighting some of the main cost drivers over the five-year period of implementation. If we're looking at, for instance, your technology, which is one of the key cost drivers, taking into account your end-user equipment over the specific five-year period, we're looking at a total of 71.5 million. If you look at fiber connectivity, that in essence should be a once-off expense in the 21-22 financial year in terms of planning, 132,000. The associated digital forensic tools, the estimate over the five-year period, 397 million, and establishing the designated point of contact that we will explain in the following slide, 11.3 million. So the total cost associated with the implementation of the Cybercrime Act, the anticipated cost over the five-year period then amounts to 480.6 million over that specific period in time. In terms of the Cybercrime Act, Honorable Chair, the National Commissioner must establish a designated point of contact for the Republic. Now, the department has looked at various alternatives that we have available, and at this point, it is recommended that the designated point of contact must be established in collaboration with the CSIR at an estimated cost of 3.9 million per year. In addition, there's an additional 600,000 that will be required, Honorable Chair, during the 22-23 financial year to cover the initial setup costs for the designated point of contact. That includes, for instance, your required technology. If we further, as far as the strengthening our capability to deal with the legislative changes, the SAPS will revise our national instructions and policy to align with the various legislative changes. For example, we have begun with the revision of our national instruction that deals with bail and the release of prisoners in accordance with the Criminal Law and Related Matters Amendment Act. We have also drafted a draft implementation plan for capacity building sessions regarding the amendment of the GBV-related legislation. As far as the, we will also, Honorable Chair, on the same topic, continue to educate and conduct awareness sessions in all 9 provinces. That includes internally and externally as part of the effort to facilitate capability development. We also will be required to review our directives that relates to the detention of suspects. In terms of GBV, Honorable Chair, the SAPS is reporting on Pillar 3 of the Gender-Based Violence and Femicide National Strategic Plan. And the SAPA's mandate in terms of this is to prevent, combat, investigate crime, to maintain public order, to protect and secure the inhabitants of the Republic and their property, and to uphold and enforce the law. The SAPS have developed internally a departmental GBV and sexual offences action plan, and this is to ensure that GBV is addressed through a proper coordinated approach by the relevant disciplines in the environment. We have also established national and provincial steering committees on gender-based violence that is currently monitoring the implementation of both the National Strategic Plan as well as the SAPS Action Plan. We also at the simultaneously chair provides monthly progress reports on the implementation of the National Strategic Plan to the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. We have allocated plus minus 1.3 billion on baseline activities that relates to GBV and the resourcing of our family violence, child abuse and sexual offences units. That includes 1.2 billion on the FCS humans and other resources. That includes the operational expenses associated with the units. 30 million on youth, children and vulnerable groups. That includes your awareness campaigns. And in addition to the above, an additional 70 million plus 30 million was allocated to the 9 provinces for the prioritization of GBV response and to strengthen our FCS units. The allocation of the 100 million, the 70 plus 30 that I've just referred to, the Western Cape is 15.8 million, Northern Cape 5.9, Free State 8.4, Eastern Cape 13 million, KwaZulu-Natal 15.3 million, Mpumalanga 7.4, similar, same to Limpopo, Gauteng 18 million, and the Northwest 8.4 million. In terms of addressing gender-based violence, continuing on the same topics, if we look at the responsibility of the Division Detective and Forensic Service, it is more reactive in nature as they are responsible for the investigation of the incidents that is reported as well as the analysis of evidence associated with those cases. Now, when we look at our proactive awareness campaigns, we are conducting them currently at schools through social media events and at events by the FCS units in collaboration with social crime prevention and other identified state departments. We have also included in the annual performance plan of SAPS a number of indicators that relates to gender-based violence, and these have also been linked to the National Strategic Plan. For instance, we are focusing on the reduction of outstanding case dockets that are older than a year that relates to crimes against women, the same as far as crimes against children is concerned, prioritizing the reduction of outstanding case dockets. We are also targeting, in terms of our strategic plan, the increasing of the conviction rate for both contact crimes against women as well as contact crimes against children. The following indicators are also monitored, Honourable Chair, by SAPS, and we are reporting on the National Strategic Plan. That includes your detection rate for contact crimes against children, the case exhibits that relates to contact crime. That is included in the annual operational plan of the division, where we are focusing on enhancing the processing of forensic exhibits, both the routine cases as well as the non-routine cases that relates to that. And we are also focusing on the percentage of our FCS investigators that are attending biannual debriefing sessions, and that is embedded in the AOP of the Detective Service, and providing services to children and mentally disabled persons in terms of the certificates that needs to be issued. The process court-driven cases, as it is being communicated by NPA, we are also monitoring that to avoid cases being struck from the roll or withdrawn as a result of pending DNA results. We are also focusing on the capacitation of the specific capabilities, operational hours, by allocating overtime for the purpose of reducing the backlog and increasing the production of that relates to our forensic products. The component head for forensics and forensic science and the section head biology has also been appointed to account on operational objective and install the governance framework associated with that. Chair, there has been progressive and significant growth on the down management of DNA. And in the second quarter, going to the last quarter of the previous financial year, the backlog was reduced by 38.71%. That is from 251,000 to 154,000. At this point in time, Chair, there's no agreement or working documents between the SAPs and private and public partners with regard to the dealing with DNA backlogs within SAPs. The GBB committee has resolved that they will donate a DNA extraction instrument to the South African Police Service that will increase our ability to isolate your DNA from post-coital and differential samples in GBB-related cases. Now, this instrument is currently being validated. It's developmental by CRISP in collaboration with the University of KwaZulu-Natal. Should this instrument pass the validation studies, it will then be handed to FSL to do internal validations, after which the donation process, as per government or SAP protocols, can then take place. On the matters, specific matters that, or the additional matters that the committee asked us to respond on the spending on the previous financial year, our contributions to economic reconstruction and recovery, the legal impediments that's preventing us from achieving economic transformation, and the renting and owning of police buildings that is occupied by SAPS. Now, Chair, at the end of March 2022, at the end of the previous financial year, the actual expenditure of SAPS allocation was standing at 99.13%. That is an improved spending compared with the previous financial year. In the previous financial year, we achieved 95.9% spending. And as I indicated in the last financial, or the 21-22 financial year, we achieved 99.13%. So the underspending that is identified in the previous financial year amounts to a total of 878 million, of which 98% or 869 million was related to earmarked and specifically allocated funding, as well as 9 million or 1.2% that was allocated in terms of capital funding. Now, the department has already implemented measures to improve our spending internally through regular monitoring, evaluation, and timely interventions to ensure that the services identified do realize within the identified acceptable timeframes. There's also continuous engagement and escalation on challenges that is brought through by third-party dependencies to the relevant authorities that relate to those identified third parties. Jay, in terms of the National Treasury's preferential procurement regulations in terms of 2017, in terms of Section 5 of the preferential procurement policy framework that is applicable to organs of state and public entities. To this effect, the SAPS has implemented the preferential procurement regulations 2017 through a national circular dated 10 April 2017, which is applicable to all two procurements equal to or above 30,000. Now, pursuant to the judgment referred to above, National Treasury communique dated 25 February 2022 advised all organs of state that all tenders advertised on or after 16 February 2022 be held in abeyance and that no new tenders be advertised. The effect of this on the South African Police Service is that we would not have been able to fulfill our obligations in terms of our constitutional mandate. The Minister of Finance granted the SAPS exemption from the provisions of the referred to policy, and this exemption is for the interim until the National Treasury issues new preferential procurement regulations. The procurement process within all organs of state are regulated by a myriad of statutory provisions. Now, that includes, inter alia, the Section 217 of the Constitution, the PFMA, Treasury regulations, the preferential procurement policy framework that I referred to, the preferential procurement regulations 2017, referred to as the regulations, and the National Treasury Practice Notice, as well as internal departmental procurement guidelines, national instruction, our delegation of powers, etc. Now, following the Constitutional Court judgment in Minister of Finance versus AfriBusiness, NPC, in 2020, National Treasury issued a communique dated 25 February 2022 to advise organs of state that all tenders, as I previously indicated, advertised all or after 16 February 2022 to be held in abeyance and that new tenders must be advertised. Now, as indicated in aforementioned communique from Treasury had the effect on the department that we will not be in a position to procure critical goods and services to enable us as a department to respond to our constitutional mandate. So as already indicated, the Minister of Finance has been subsequently exempted SAPS from the provisions of the procurement, the relevant regulations, and then the exemption is for an interim period, as I indicated, until the new preferential procurement regulations are then issued. At this point in time, Honourable Chair, there are no legal impediments to the SAPS in terms of achieving economic transformation. As far as our buildings are concerned, the renting and owning of buildings that are occupied by the South African Police Service, the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure is the custodian of all government property and is mandated to procure leased accommodation on behalf of the South African Police Service in terms of GIAMA. Now, the process to procure leased accommodation commences with the SAPS communicating our requirement with National Department of Public Works. The National in Public Works then undertakes a procurement process, and in turn they also conclude lease agreements. Now, it needs to be noted that only Public Works can enter into such lease agreements on behalf of user departments in line with the mandated custodian functions. Now, currently the Public Works is leasing a total of 1,143 properties for various SAPS units in all 9 provinces. Now, in the landlords, in terms of these leased property consists of private, provincial government, municipalities, and state-owned entities. The South African Police Service itself does not own buildings, as all buildings are vested under the Public Works as the mandated custodian for all government-owned buildings. So we as a department is a user or an occupant of the respective buildings, and we are currently occupying a total of 6,826 state-owned buildings. So if we look at the total, taking into account the leased as well as state-owned buildings, we are occupying a total of 7,969 buildings. On slide, Chair, Honourable Chair, we provide a breakdown of these buildings. We're starting with the state-owned assets within the respective province and the number of buildings. You will note that if we talk about buildings, that includes in the respective provinces as well as national head office, there's a total of 5,602. Police stations, there's a total of 1,068. Satellite police stations, 140. And contact points, a total of 16. In terms of our leased assets, there's a total of 1,143. They are distributed, as we indicated, in the respective provinces and head office. If we look at the head office capabilities, there's 53 FSL units, 2 crime intelligence units, a total of 70, fully-fledged police stations in terms of leased assets, a total of 90, and other leases that includes, for instance, your railway infrastructure, the infrastructure at borders, etc., is a total of 948. So that gives us a total of 1,143. Honourable Chair, that concludes the presentation, and I trust that we have addressed the issues that were raised by the committee in terms of the invitation that we have received. From my side, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Major General Rabi, for the presentation. Thank you at DM. Thank you, National Commissioner. Perhaps let me start there. Let me start on behalf of the committee by congratulating General Masimula, our new commissioner, for the new responsibility that he has been given by the people of South Africa. there's no doubt it's quite a responsibility. But as the committee, we are looking forward to working with your good self and your team. Yes, at the end, thanks for that correction. Nate, we see a lot of people. So in my head, I thought it's the first time. Perhaps it's because there's a brand new commissioner that I thought perhaps is the first time that we are interacting. But thank you for that correction. Before I allow the oral members, I just wanted to make this, have this at the back of your minds, that for a budget of about 100 billion rand per annum, 1% underspending in your department means a 1 billion rand underspending. So it becomes huge. So sometimes a percentage reduces everything to just 100. So 1% is a 1 billion rand in your area. Just have that at the back of your mind. All right, members. Here's a presentation by steps. You know how we do it. Can I have indications of the oral members who would like to ask questions or make comments?
Matafa.
Honorable Matafa. Honorable members. Honourable members, Honourable Kaiso. I see your hand, Honourable Tlangwini. Other honourable members. You know what intimidate my general? Honourable members, do I have other names? Honourable members, okay. I think as you come in, then you'll indicate. Oral Matafa, can you please come in then?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to you. Good morning, DM Matale, General Masemola, and your team. Good morning, honourable members and members of the media. Chair, maybe let me start first by thanking the presenters for the work that went into the preparation for this presentation. It is really assisting and empowering. We'll be able to do our work with more information, and then we are more wiser after this presentation. Chair, please allow me to start with one general and blanket question. And this is what most people are saying now, that we have reached a state of lawlessness in the country, particularly in townships. I just want to find out what is the feeling of the SEBS in relation to that particular assertion. The second point emanates from slide 12, which states that the allocation will be prioritized in provinces with the highest incidences of reported crimes. I just want to find out which provinces are those, and the reported incidents of crime, how then do we identify them being major issues that require attention? I'll give a simple example. In Gauteng, there's a high rise of highway robbers who disables vehicles with spikes and rocks that are put on the road, and immediately you stop, you are robbed. Now, these crimes have become very violent, and then recently we've seen an increase in the number of fatalities relating to this particular crime. Has it been flagged as a major incident that requires special attention? If yes, what is the strategy that is going to be implemented? Because now motorists have become easy targets. And as I indicated, the violence that comes with these particular robberies don't leave any prisoners, and they do not care if whether the person driving has family with or small kids. All that they do is take whatever they want using any means that they have at their disposal. Chair, the third point will be on the budget reduction that has been introduced, particularly on dealing with compensation of employees and goods and services. I just want to find out, have we seen a drastic reduction on the personnel headcount within the SEPs over the last 5 years? And what impact has this reduction had on specific core programs by SEPs that we should take note of? And then maybe it's also important that SEPs is able just to share with us what is the current turnover rate for the department, and what are the top three reasons why this turnover rate is where it is? What are the reasons that we are losing people from the force? And then coupled to issues of compensation of employees, are we able to be furnished with information on the age profile of the SEPs workforce? I think it was General Masemola who did indicate that SEPs is, how did he put it, that it requires more work on the ground. So we just want to find out if whether their workforce is flexible, agile, and vibrant enough that is able to respond to incidents of crime. The other point here is on the issue of gender-based violence. I'm interested to find out what is the time frame for investigating a rape case. Do we have something that is documented to say, like the 72-hour strategy, by this particular time after a rape case has been reported, we need to have at least a lead? Having said that, Chair, we know that SEPs, especially on slide 30 and 31, they indicate various metrics that the department uses to track its annual performance in terms of combating this particular crime of gender-based violence. Is it possible that SEPs can provide us with the trends or movements in these indices, so that the committee can be able to evaluate if whether the current interventions are effective and there is value for money as far as the budget allocations are concerned? Chair, on the issue of capital assets and the backlog on police stations, can we maybe be finished with the planned police stations, their number? Where are they planned, and what are the issues that are causing these particular backlogs? Another one for Gauteng, where I come from, there was an imbizo in Olive and Old Bosch, Ward 77 in the city of Tshwane, where the minister was present and the issue of a police station was raised, because Olive and Old Bosch has grown to a point that the mobile police station that is there is not sufficient to be able to police accordingly. And there was talk of a physical police station that will be erected. Is it still in the pipeline? If yes, how far is that process? Because the community is still asking our parliamentary constituency office on that particular commitment that was made by the minister and the team when they were at the imbizo in Olive and Old Bosch. The last one, Chair, in terms of the norms and standards, they can be international or they can be in comparison with developing countries like ours. Can we safely say that the number of the workforce of SAPS is in line with acceptable norms and standards in terms of coverage for the size of the population that South Africa has? That will assist, Chair, so that we are able to know if our allocation will derive value for money, because coverage of policing and community safety will be sufficient based on the number of the workforce and personnel in the police force. I just wanted to find out if whether is the SEPS management certified that we are actually on par with what is acceptable across the continent or globally. I will pause there, Chair. Thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity to participate in this discussion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Matafa. Honourable Kaiso, please come in.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and greetings to the Deputy Minister and your team, and also want to welcome the new general in the police service. We hopefully you would then assist our people in the country to deal with the challenges of crime. So let me just start here first. I think it's very important to go to other interesting area that I, when during the presentation, when I was listening, I especially around the issue of, you know, the that was presented around a strategic plan or focus area, you know, of fighting crime in the country, that the presenter was making. I didn't hear that to what an extent, because if for instance you check the issue of gangsterism in some parts of the country and mostly in the hotspot area like your Western Cape, where you would find, you know, hardcore criminals, you know, or drug-related criminals go to a school and shoot learners there, and you know, as if there is nobody who's looking at that, you know, just find it very easy to do it very quickly. Just go there, shoot people, they lie down dead in the ground and they disappear into thin air. So I just want to know, because there are areas where there's rampant crime, where gangsters have, you know, have formed and they are able to rule the township and, you know, destabilizing our communities. So I thought maybe we also hear that, because it should really have been a part of the broader strategy to say, to deal with the gangsterism. Whilst I'm at the same point, Chair, because the new amendment bill, looking at it, adds a number of responsibilities to the police themselves. Now, I just want to know as to how, to what an extent has the now South African police have now readied themselves to align their service and their capability in as far as the newly, the amendment bill, or the criminal law amendment bill. Obviously, it introduces a number of, you know, extended responsibilities. Now, my interest is, to what an extent has the SAPS now prepared to, you know, to encompass or to operate in such a way that now those new responsibilities in the SSAPs will be able to be accommodated. Yes. So one would be very much interested. The other issue that perhaps one would have loved to hear or to understand whilst dealing with the priorities then is the issue of illegal mining in the country. which one does not get it very clear. At what point really is this matter going to be dealt with, you know, by SAPS? Or what is the plan around dealing with that particular crime? Because it deals with the economy, it deals with the economy of the country. So one would have expected that there is going to be, or there is something in the pipeline, if I may put it like that, Chair, that is underway, such that now it will be able to assist in the intervention, or to assist, or SAPS is able to put a plan to deal with the issue of the illegal mining. Because for me, it doesn't make sense that the private sector does not come to the party with this particular matter as well. Because during the presentation, I could pick up that now, indeed, the SAPS is also struggling to get the private sector to form part of the fighting of the crime there. I would include even illegal mining as one criminal activity that is taking place. I also want to know, Honorable, from the presenters, Honorable Chair, from the General, that what is the rate of, attendance of the subs in as far as, a 30-day payment of our service providers, so that we should not just rate that, or we should not assume that something it's okay in as far as, payment of service providers in 30 days in as far as such is concerned. To what an extent, have you been doing this, are you able to demonstrate that you are very consistent in terms of, complying with the 30-day, payment for service providers? Because it has been an outcry, that we come across, Honorable Chair, in most of the department that we have come across. So we didn't hear much about this, so that we know that we should not find later that it's one of the monies that are, related also with the underspending that has been said. We also want to know, given the rise of the taxi violence, and other means of organized crime in the country, you would imagine where people are able to stage a war against the communities, taxi violence, staging some mini wars with the communities and amongst themselves as taxi operators, just freely, as if there is no authority whatsoever. So what plans and strategies have been put in place such that now this type of criminal activity, where people do not see any existence of law, can operate so freely? You would imagine about taxi violence there in Soweto and in some parts of the country, in the Eastern Cape, and so there's been a chase around with gunfire. So we just want to know that, because I think it's one of the priorities that are supposed to be reflecting, that they need more resources from the police so that they can be able to do their work properly. Also on the issue of which deals with the increase of copper, copper theft, copper cable theft and steel, which destroys the infrastructure. And when talking about infrastructure, it takes me back to what I've said or referred to when I was saying illegal mining activities in places such as Machabeng. It has been so rampant to an extent that people are able to go now to destroy municipal infrastructure because they want to operate through their criminal activities there. So I just want to know, perhaps it should be something that needs to be taken forward as a build-up towards 2023, 2024. if not so. Now, Minister, perhaps I might have bring this issue prematurely because I want to know the relationship between the community policing forum and the SARPS. You know, how does it look like? Because in the presence of the surge of crime, one would readily think of, you know, the operation of community policing forum, the activities and their relationship with the SARPS. How does it look like? Because one would be so ambitious to say, have you done, has there been any research which has been done to say, what if the SARPS puts in place or the department puts in place, what is called the volunteers or broaden, you know, the community forum to an extent that now we are able to take in people for, in a form of giving them a stipend such that now there's a huge network now which collaborates with the police, you know, with some way of, you know, giving a stipend or something like that. So have you done such research? So if so, what would be the financial implication of such a research, or if you have done so? So let me pause here, Chairperson. Thank you very much for allowing me to ask this question.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Honorable Changwini, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. You know, Chair and Major General and Deputy Minister, one of the most scariest genders to be in South Africa, it's being a woman and giving birth to a woman, giving birth to a girl child. That is one of the most scariest for women of South Africa, because we don't feel safe in this country. We don't feel protected by the police. While the major was reporting on the GBV desks, I called some of the police stations he mentioned. And Nyanga Police Station is one of them that say they don't have a GBV desk. And that is a concern. If we come to the committee and we report on things, and then when you go to the ground, those things are not there. You are faced to go and report your sexual violation cases at a police station. They don't have this imaginary desks that the Major General have just reported to us now. So I'd like to know, what oversight are they having over this GBV desks? Or if somebody have just typed a national circular and said you must establish this thing and people have not done so? Because it becomes problematic if they are coming to this committee and report on things that is supposed to service women of this country, and it's not there. We are being reported lies. That is quite concerning, Chair, for me, and for many women that are seeking the police to protect them. So we need to get, is this GB desk established, and what oversight is this are they doing on this GB desk that they are imaginary having? Then the second one, Chair, is the understanding. I like what consequence management was have you implemented to ensure that this does not happen? Just to say to us, no, we have done, we are evaluating and do we want to treat so that it doesn't happen? Somebody must take the fall. Somebody must be disciplined. Plus minus 800 million on underspending. And then we are told you are putting now more evaluation processes in place. But shouldn't it have been there in the first place? You have dilapidated police stations. You don't have vehicles to majority of your police stations. You have one or two vehicles. And then you get, we come here to an appropriations committee and say, gladly say we have underspended on plus minus 800 million. I mean, somebody must, there must be disciplinary actions for such incompetence. But there's no other way to say it. It's incompetent. So really, like, has anyone been disciplined or for this underspending? Because really, it's not it doesn't give a good reflection on the department. Was it a department that is supposed to service communities and ensure that we are safe as community members? Then the last one, Chair, I want the department or the police to investigate a case in or look into a matter, even if they're not going to investigate. There was a case yesterday in Durban that is trending on Twitter. Security guards and Metro Police pointing students with live ammunition. So I we can't have police pointing students with live ammunition. It's really leaving very much concerning. A very much concerning thought in one's head that you are sending your kids to school and they are pointed by the police by live ammunition. So we need to find out what have happened there. And then the last Chair, is to find out, I think also in terms of, yes, the buildings are owned by Public Works, but what work and what research have you done as the police to find out as to move away from leasing buildings? And then to ensure as well that these buildings that you are occupying, they are proper for police to work in. Just the other day, Chair, I don't know if you can recall, Honorable Saropan have reported on a police station that is just in bad condition. So what work is the department doing to ensure that they are doing effective oversight and ensuring these buildings and police stations are in a good condition? And on the last one, when last have you done a proper oversight to ensure that all police stations are having rape kits? I can tell you now, a lot of police stations that doesn't have rape kits. We mustn't let our women down like this. And this department is letting women of South Africa down. It's really letting women of South Africa down. We don't feel safe in this country. And then to come here to this committee and report on a GBV desk that is non-existent, it leaves a sour taste in my mouth. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sangwini. Before I come in, do I have any other honorable member who would like to come in? I know the honorable members who are complaining that they're just struggling to connect. Yes.
Chair, Honorable Sarupan, if I can please come in. So I'm just battling with connectivity quite badly this morning.
Please come in, Honorable Sarupan.
Sure, Chair. So I think I want to reiterate what Honorable Nsangwini said about the GBV desk. She's absolutely right. In my constituency around Springs, Kuchema, Brakpan, Duduza, the ones that they claim have been set up but are not functional, and most of the staff stations don't have them. Chair, the second thing, and this is quite disturbing for me, is we were told by DPWI that the Kuatema SAP station, which is falling to pieces, and the SAPs can't operate from it, it's been closed down by the Department of Labor, et cetera, that DPWI told us that they can't fix it because it belongs to the municipality. I received a copy of the contract, and the contract between DPWI and the municipality says in there that DPWI takes responsibility for the maintenance of that building. So DPWI misled this committee, Chair, and I'm very disturbed that that happened in this committee a couple of days ago, and that DGs and senior officials can mislead this committee. But I'd like to know from the officials here what they're doing about the Kuatema SAP station, if they're going to try and bring in any temporary structures and so on, because we cannot continue like this with that entire community living under terror, because the crime rates are spiking quite badly in Kuatema now. There's a gang going around hijacking people. It is becoming a very serious problem. They're operating out of Fossil Arrest, and they're coming into Kuatema, and the hijackings are spiking in a very, very serious way out there. Then, Chair, my third question to staff today is in relation to the cost of VIP protection. It is a very, very large chunk of the staff's budget, and I want to know what they're doing to begin to contain those costs. Why so much is spent on VIP protection? I mean, this country spends more on VIP protection than land reform. And I think that it's a very, very serious problem. So I'm hoping that we can get answers on that. Thank you very much.
Honorable Sarupan, thank you. Do I have any other honorable member? Honorable Matafa, do you want something? Do you have something you want to add?
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. Yeah, this one is just a direct question. Since there is reported underspending, which also affects crime intelligence, can maybe the subs indicate to us what is the status of crime intelligence as we speak, in terms of it being fully staffed, its resources, and so forth? Because my view is that most of the crime that we see spiking, like Honorable Sarupan is saying, and the example that I gave in Gauteng, could be averted if we have ears and eyes within the communities. And the other one, Chair, is just on the comments that were made by SASRIA when they engaged with the committee. And their view was that with the unrest in KZN and some parts of Gauteng, the damage was extensive due to the lack of immediate and urgent response by SAPS. Can we just have a view from the SAPS management as far as that assertion is concerned? And the police headquarters or would-be headquarters, Telkom Towers in Tshwane, what is the status? The last thing that we heard was that it was earmarked to be headquarters for the police, but it seems as if there was a renovation, but there was never 100% takeover. And the last one, Chair, is just, I'm not sure whether it's a rumor. There is a video circulating about the police college. I'm not sure whether it's Sevamas in Hammarskraal. It's portrayed to be in a state of disrepair. I just want to find out if whether can that be the case from SAPS? And if it is so, who's responsible for the maintenance there? Is it DPWI? And if yes, why is this college left to deteriorate to a state that it is shown in the clip that is circulating? And also, if it is not, is it part of the maintenance that has been devolved to subs? If yes, how much of the portion in terms of the size of the asset base that is being used by subs has devolved into subs purview for maintenance? Thank you very much, Chair, for the second bite. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Honorable Taiso?
Yes, Chair. Just one or two questions. So I just want to check how many police stations have they been built by subs over the period under review? No, let me start from a period of 5 years rather. Just to check that, and or how many are those that are still being constructed? As one question that I wanted to ask, and second one quickly is to check does subs began with the digitization of your work, especially which is related to things such as fingerprint forensic investigation that would assist, have you begun digitizing has the department begun to digitize its work on some sensitive information that needs to be stored or be kept for future reference by the department? Because I think it's very, very much important in crime fighting that you digitize some information that is very critical. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Arun Klangini, do you want to have a second fight?
No, Chair, I'm about to respond to Kala, Chair, and then Klambi after that, if you will allow.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Arun Sarupen, anything came to your mind?
No, Chair, nothing to add. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Arun members. Let me join the honorable members by welcoming the presentation about what is happening in your area of influence. From my side, it's more about your recruitment strategy. when one does oversight, especially in the rural areas, generals, there's always an outcry that unlike before, when the recruitment of new police men and women doesn't touch those areas. True or false? What exactly is the situation? How do you ensure that those areas are not being marginalized? I just want to get your comment to say, agreeing that your resources are not what they are supposed to be, but the resources that Parliament appropriates and gives to SEPs, would you say that those resources are being efficiently used and are getting ready for money? I just want to obviously say why you say whatever and what must be done. Are there areas that you think that you can save as a department? It is now, especially in these finance committees, one area that we are worrying and keep talking about is that there's a lot of leakages, money leaving the country through a number of sophisticated financial ways, for instance, you are base erosion and profit shifting, illicit financial flows, etc. And we are said that we are losing billions and billions of rands as far as it's concerned. So I'm just asking that what your take, what is happening around that area? Because even if we interact with SARS, we'll find that that's the question that we ask them. But from your side, what are you doing as far as that is concerned? And two, would you say that you are well equipped to deal with this form of crime? Let me touch on Kai, Jackie. But I think what Honorable Matafa was saying, I think that's one crime where there's a feeling that people are getting away with impunity. What is the problem? Why can't we fight this one? What exactly is the problem? But I think my emphasis would be on the cross-border crime, the carjacking. And we are told that most of these cars find themselves, especially the 4x4s, find themselves in the neighboring countries. I just want to check what type of collaboration are we having with the law enforcement agencies in those countries, and how successful has been that collaboration been? So I also just want to hear your comment. It relates to rental versus ownership. What is your take? Do you think that the type one, that the work that you are, I beg your pardon, the relationship that you are having with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, as far as being a landlord, is the optimal one? Do you think that you'd do better if you were to own and be responsible for those buildings? Just talk to that, please. I'll tell you why you are saying that is because we have had interaction with that department. And again, we had an interaction with the Department of Defense, who had a view about this matter. So we'd like to get your view as such. Can I check how many new police stations have been built? I'm saying in Soweto, in Botshabelo, in Khayelitsha, and Umlaas. I'm deliberately picking up those townships because they are amongst the highest growth areas in the country. So how many new police stations have been built in the past 20 years in those areas? DM, let me also hasten to say that in instances where the team doesn't have immediate answers, we would always say that we prefer that those answers be sent us in writing rather than answers which are given just to take us out of the way. So I just want to see how responsive we've been to these areas, which if we're always under-resourced before 1994, but I just want to check how have we responded to this. Another question is that I just want to check, how much business do you do with GNEL? Are there any items that you are buying from them? Related to that question is, who manufacture most of the equipment that is being used by SEPs? That becomes very important for us as far as localization is concerned, economic growth, and ensuring that we also defend what is ours and denied in this instance. And lastly, Commissioner, the just want to check, perhaps it's related to what Honorable Ntlangwini was saying, how well equipped are you to deal with crowd control? Because it looks like it's a feature now which is coming up and again. How well equipped are we as set to deal with a crowd control? Thank you. I'll allow DM and the team to respond to the issues which have been raised. You'll decide who answers which question. Honorable DM, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to committee members on the questions that you have posed to us. We really appreciate this interface. I will request that the National Commissioner and the team start first to respond. I'll come at the end. Over to you, National Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, the Deputy Minister, I will align the team to respond, but first let me take the following responses. On the first question asked about are we not reaching a state of lawlessness, the answer to that would be that we, as a country, we have not yet reached that stage, because we still can wake up, go to work, go to school, go to bank, and go to shop. You still find the shops intact. So there are indications, yes, I must acknowledge, especially when one monitors social media, where one sees some signs of, especially material videos that are circulating, which we, especially one area was within the mining sector, and we are doing, there are measures that we are taking in that regard. So to say totally there is lawlessness, one would say no, but there are some indications which we are not leaving them to their own. We are taking measures. For example, within the mining sector, there are now and then videos coming out showing some people with firearms. And we have responded as the SAPS, especially areas around Orkney. We did have operations there around Orkney and around Middleburg Midbank recently. We had operations there where we had quite commendable successes. We arrested a lot of foreign nationals, we confiscated a lot of firearms, and we have not yet stopped. We are continuing. Maybe just to answer the question around the issue of illicit mining, the theft of copper as well as steel, and the issue around extortion at construction sites. As you are aware that after the president gave this directive during the last SONA, we have established a unit which the provinces have been directed. They are currently, this current month, we are establishing a unit because in the past we had a part-time small unit in certain provinces that will deal with this matter. And we've realized that we are not successful because they do this job on an ad hoc. So currently, we are establishing a task team that will culminate into a unit within a year. Now we started as a task team. They are going to, we will call them critical infrastructure and economic combating task teams for now. We have identified 18 municipalities where we have this problem. I mean district municipalities in the country where we have this problem of be it the cable theft or illicit mining or extortion or the theft of either Praza or Transnet infrastructure. We are currently this month establishing those units, and these units, these task teams, for now, as I said, they'll be task teams, they are going to solely focus on a full-time basis, no more ad hoc, to deal with the crimes of illicit mining, theft of copper, as well as within the energy and rail industry, including our fuel pipeline. So by the end of this month, we'll have these task teams that are focusing, that is in addition to the smaller task team that we had before. These ones will be full-time focusing on this, to cap these specific crimes in those areas, the 80, the 18 district municipalities that I've spoken about. So that we think we will be able to win this crime because we'll be on a full-time basis. And these are integrated teams consisting of both staffs members and other institutions like your Metro Polices, both your Praza and your Transnet officials, as well as Home Affairs. So we think we'll be able to win. We regard it as very important because it affects the economy of the country. That's how we are going to move forward. The tendency of highway crimes, we have picked it recently, especially in Gauteng, we've seen it. It has subsided at some point, but we have seen it's coming up now, the spiking and hygiene of people. And the provincial commission of Gauteng have put more personnel in the areas of highways with a view to arrest those criminals because shifting them is just like we will have more continuous problem. Around the on the question of gangsterism within Western Cape and the crimes that are happening within that area, we Western Cape is one of the provinces that one would say is fortunate. Currently, it's Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. Where we have extra capacity, Western Cape, we have extra capacity there for more than over a period of 3 years. And that is focusing more on matters within the townships, as well as to deal with the issue of gangsterism, assisting the anti-gang unit that we have there. And yes, we have made inroads in arresting quite a number of suspects in that regard, but we know that yes, the crime is still persisting, and in most of our townships in Western Cape, we realize there is a growing problem of extortion. And these teams that we have there, we were supposed to withdraw them, but we thought it's not a good time to withdraw them, but still keep them there and have them continue fighting the crime there. On the matter of the police, the relationship between the police and the CPF, as we move around with Mbizos ourselves, provincial commissioners, myself, and also ministerial Mbizos, we have picked up, yes, that the relationship between the police and the community, it's a bit of a problem because most communities, they disown the current CPF. Not all of them, but most of them, they disown the current structures of CPF. As a result, we then have undertaken a decision that we need to rebuild the CPF. We are going to go into a campaign where we will work out, because there are a lot of CBOs and community structures that are outside the CPF that do disown the CPF. So we are going to embark on a renewal process where the communities, together with the local police, can re-elect their representative to form part of the CPF structure. The issues of stipends, normally what we use is not stipend, but we fund the project by the CPF. Unfortunately, currently CPF work is still voluntary work, and we take note that it is a challenge that people cannot afford to continuously volunteer. So the Secretary of Police, which intended to take over CPS, is working on the matter of stipend. So I think they are best to talk more on it. Unfortunately, I think they are not in attendance, but I know that they are working on those matters. Honorable Chair and members, on the matter of the GBV desks, we started establishing this last year, and we first started on the top 30, and from there we moved over to all police stations. All provincial commissioners were directed to establish this CPS. Currently, we are in the process of auditing who have and who don't have. The division, this board is busy processing that to audit who have and who don't have. And in the process where there isn't, we will of course seek explanation from the relevant provincial commissioner why they did not establish as directed and agreed, because we agreed with them with this program and they agreed to the time frames. But yes, as national, we have not yet audited all the police stations to ensure that they do have. We are in the process of start auditing, and we will be able to know where there are problems, and we will remedy those areas where they has not been established. On the issue of we think we should move away from lease buildings, yes, as South African Police Service would prefer to move away from leasing and owning the buildings ourselves. It is unfortunate that, as honorable members are aware, we work with the Department of Public Works, and unfortunately, the progress that we wanted is not as fast as it is. You recall that one of the areas of our underspendings within the capital budget, not because of our sole own doing, but also as a result of the Department of Public Works. We had a meeting a day before yesterday by the Police Portfolio Committee with the Minister of Public Works and the Minister of Police, including the DM, and the officials from both departments who were part of that meeting to try and resolve the blockages that are there within the construction of police stations and renovations of police stations. It's quite a number of police stations that are under construction that are not finished. Some are construction sites. A typical example is the Parkberg police station at Bloemfontein, the CBD of Bloemfontein, which has been under renovation for more than 5 years. And we have police working there. So it's like police are working at a construction site. It's a very unhealthy situation. And it was not about rebuilding the police station. It was just the renovation of certain areas of the police station, but it took more than 5 years. Just an example, but it's more of that type of sites that we have which do not finish. So we engaged and we agreed to meet agency, myself and the DG of Public Works. We'll soon be meeting and see how which areas can we agree to resolve and which not, because most of our areas of performance are bottlenecked by this area of not getting properties done in very quick time. Telkom Towers, there is, it's correct, yes, we purchased in 2016. The building consists of 10 towers. Currently, we are occupying one tower, and which is also not 100% ready to be occupied, because myself have not yet moved in there because there are certain areas that still needs to be repaired. The minister, the DM, still also needs to move in there. It's not 100% repaired, the same one tower that has been repaired according to Public Works. The 9 towers, they are not ready to be occupied. There is a lot of repair work that still needs to be done, and it's one of those areas that we engaged with Public Works. Yes, currently we are leasing buildings on a month-to-month basis, and the meeting I did for yesterday resolved to them that we need to meet so that Public Works can come up with a program because they've been promising us all along that they will repair the building and make it ready for to move in. But till today, we can't move in there. We have one building where we are accommodating the Central Farm Registry, which is small. They can't do their work in terms of firearm application and licensing. They need a bigger building. And we have promised that the Central Farm Registry was supposed to have been in Telkom Towers last year, September. And up to this moment, they have not yet moved in because the building is not ready. And the program by DPW seems not to be getting us somewhere. So those are some of the problems we encounter. We also have quite a number of things, more than 20, a number of police stations, yes, that belong to municipalities. One of them, which is not a site to see, is on Kuruleni, which needs repairs, but we can't repair them because they belong to municipalities. So we also discuss those matters. But Major General Stoller will expatiate more on these buildings, on matters of the building. On the issue of the status of crime intelligence, we currently advertised posts in the environment of crime intelligence in order to facilitate them. We do have quite a number of shortages. There are posts that have been advertised, and some will be filled, and some are being filled currently. I'm sure the General Njinga will express more on exactly what is the progress in that regard. Our view in terms of police response during the July 2021 unrest. Our view is that we did have police that were on the ground, yes. And at some point, the police has to make a choice as to which areas are they going to protect and which not. There are areas that we ended up protecting. We see with the capacity that we have of public order, which is just below 5,000, which we have currently. And we did definitely try and do what we were supposed to do. If you call in Gauteng, it started at the areas of around Alexandra, and Gauteng responded, but then it started spreading. And the police were out there, they did what they could do. But they couldn't pressurize more because we also at some point had to respect life. If one takes an example with the Jabulani Mall, where the Jabulani police station is situated, the response was of the police was quite effective. But unfortunately, there were quite a number of people that came there. We are addressing those matters currently with the intake that we were given in the current financial year when we are training the 10,000 recruits, of which 4,000 of them will be going to public order police. Public order police is policing by numbers. There's no other way than by numbers. And some of our capacities are very, very low. Unfortunately, over the years, it wasn't prioritized. Not that we didn't face our voices that it needs to be prioritized, but it just happened not to be done. Currently, that's why we have what we prioritize 4,000 to go to public order police. And in terms of vehicles and equipment, we have purchased and we are going to purchase this current financial year is around 150 million. And also about 10 million that is put aside for protective equipment for public order, and also the 150 million to make sure that additional 4,000 that comes when they come, they have got resources like bulletproof vehicles and so on and so on. So we are optimistic that even though the numbers, it will not be 10,000 additional on the ground, because the turnover per month is quite high. Major General Temba will talk more on the numbers that we lose per month. So at the end of the day, we still have police stations in some of the rural areas which are not functioning 24 hours. Not that there is no service after 4 o'clock, because after 4 o'clock, there is still somebody that will respond when there is a complaint. But the fact that we cannot have shift system that runs 24 hours is a problem which we are attending to them, we want to fix with the current intake that we have. So those are the realities that we do have. I think maybe let me give my colleagues just to go on. Maybe let me just comment on the question around, are we buying from Binel? I remember this matter that, yes, we do want to support state-owned companies, which Binel is one of them. But for now, there are problems around Binel's paperwork. The day before yesterday, I engaged the DG of Treasury around this matter. I'm not sure whether the honorable members that are aware there. There is a problem around their books and their problem around compliance on other legislative, local legislative prescriptions, which for now they are preventing us to buy from them. Yes, normally we buy our ammunition and a lot of other stuff from Dinel, but currently there is a problem. So we would love to, as soon as possible, support them, buy them, but they are aware that the sooner they comply with certain obligations, the better that we will be able to can do business with them. Let me allow General
Commissioner,
Honorable Chair.
Yes, please. I usually don't do this, but I think we'll lose this, and it's very important for the committee. You are saying that there's legislation which is preventing you from buying from Dinel. Please share that with us. We are lawmakers. We are very much interested in that, because we are expected to bail out Dinel, but it can't do business because of certain legislation. Please just finish that line of thought. What exactly is happening there?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Dinel is currently not tax compliant. They can't get a tax clearance certificate. So if they get that, or if I don't know who, somebody exempts them that they still receive government money while they're in the state, by all means, we are prepared to support them. But currently, it is a conundrum that even the DG Treasury says we don't know, because the taxman says he's not prepared to budge. So that is the problem that we also said maybe government should go out and say we will reinvest this amount of money with a view to assist them to get to tax compliance. If there can be such a possibility, we think we do not have a problem. But currently, prescript says as well, whoever we do service with must be tax compliant, and currently they are not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will ask Lieutenant General Khan with all colleagues from the support services to take questions, and then from there we'll go to the operational colleagues.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Deputy Minister, honorable members, all the DNCs on the platform, and colleagues.
Honourable Chair, in respect of the questions that are still left unanswered as far as supply chain and finance is concerned.
Hello. Lieutenant General Khan, I requested that we should have our videos on. Thank you. We don't see you. Okay, that's better. Yes, there you are. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Sorry, Chair, I was indicating that in respect of questions that need to be answered that the National Commissioner has not touched on as far as supply chain management is concerned, it will be Major General Sotole that will come in and respond on the issues of non-payment within 30 days and other financial questions. It will be General Dimpane. And Chair, thereafter, in terms of digitization, it will be Major General Mavundla from the TMS environment. That's the sequence of the questions, the responses, Chair. From myself as legal services, in addition to what the National Commissioner has responded to on illegal mining, I would like to indicate, Chair, there's also a legal task team that came together comprising the relevant environments like the NPA, as well as the mining industry as well. And a draft bill has been put together, which is now sitting for further comments from the relevant environments. Chair, with your permission, I'm going to hand over to General Sotole to come in and answer the questions as far as supply chain is concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to the Chairperson and all the members on the platform, the National Commissioner and all the generals. I just want to start with the first question, which was touching on Olivan Rose Botch in Gauteng in terms of the planned construction. What I can report is that we have written immediately after the engagement with the community last year. From July, we wrote letters to DPW as the earth that we need to use for the construction of the police station is owned by the city of Tshwane. So we needed the authorization from DPW for us to acquire the land, to coordinate that approval for us to acquire the land. And up to now, we have not received any response, but we'll follow up as we have written already. 9 letters that we wrote since last year just to make a follow-up to say we're still waiting for feedback. So that is what we have done from our side in terms of the acquisition of the land itself. Then in terms of the backlog of the police stations that were supposed to have been completed in the previous financial years and were not finalized, we had including DPW, we had the ones that are on site clearance and planning and design and execution. The ones that were execution is 28 that we have a backlog on. That's including now the 8 of DPW for the police is 20. Now, what we have done is that in the next 5 years, we for the current financial year, we are going to finish 3. 23, 24, we're going to finish 7. And 24, 25, we're going to finish 13. And 25, 26 is 8. The police stations that are currently under construction, where contractors are on site as we speak, it's Osutu in KZN. We have Rinfasmark in Northern Cape. Rinfasmark, which was supposed to be finished last financial year, had to be carried over because of the challenges that we had with the performance of the contractor. And Enedale in Gauteng, the contractor is on site. Kanana in Northwest, the contractor is on site. We have 2 other police stations that have already been approved by the BAC. We anticipate that the contractors will be on site either by the end of July, by the end of June, or because we need to obtain the construction permit from the Department of Labor. It's Moyeni in Eastern Cape and Siame in Free State. And all the others, we are just still busy with the finalization of the documentation for the appointment of contractors. Then in terms of the research has been, whether the research has been done by staff to move out of list buildings. I think this one, the National Commissioner has covered. And then the issue of Kwatema. Kwatema is a police station that has been leased from the municipality. Yes. We have been busy with DPW to resolve the issue of Kwatema, not only in terms of the condition, but at least to give us another land where we can then construct the police station. We did obtain the authorization to put park homes because the building that was occupied by the detectives was totally out. And we had to put park homes. At least the detectives had to move. But the police station itself, where the CSC and everybody is a serious crisis. And we requested for the last 2 years from DPW for them to help us with the acquisition of these buildings so that they become state-owned buildings that are purchased by the SAPS, by DPW for the SAPS, so that then we are able then to do the maintenance. But the problem is that the problem has not been resolved between DPW and the municipalities, and therefore we still stay in the same condition of that our members are exposed to really serious risk. And the additional park homes that were supposed to have been put in, we could not proceed because that authorization we could not get also from DPW. So we're just waiting for them to indicate, is there land that we can use so then we can start immediately with the site clearance if the purchasing of the Kwatema building itself for us to do a repair upgrade is not successful. Then with regard to the, I think the telecom towers, the National Commissioner has covered it adequately. The, how many buildings, how many buildings have been devolved to SAPS? Currently, we are standing at 289. The initial, during the devolution process, 270 were devolved, but we have already extended the devolution as we have built additional police stations, and we are currently standing at 289 devolved police stations. And the question on how many police stations were built by SAPS in the last 5 years, we, out of the total of 21 police stations that were built in the last 5 years, 12 were built by DPW and 9 were constructed by SAPS over the last 5 years. There was another question that was asked, I think, by the chairperson regarding how many police stations were built during the last 20 years in Soweto, but I couldn't capture the other two. I think it was 4 areas. So I'm not sure what the other 4 areas were. But this one, I think we can confirm it in writing. As soon as I confirm the other 2 areas that I think the chairperson added, it was Soweto, Busabelo, that I could capture from the question. And I think I've already covered in terms of the how many police stations are under construction currently, which is 4 construction taking place and 2 that will be that the contractors will be on site in the next month or so. Then I'm not sure if I've covered all of them, but I think those are the ones that have captured Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, may we proceed with our CFO, Lieutenant General Zimpane?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to all the Honorable Chairperson, the committee members, our Deputy Minister, our National Commissioner, all protocol observed, expressing apologies for my voice. I will try to respond to the questions that are related to finance. There was a question on where are we in terms of payment of our obligations within the timelines. I can indicate, Chairperson, that the department's performance average is 99.76% in terms of payment of our service providers. There would be invoices where we've got disputes, where we have to send them back and resolve those disputes, but the department is performing over 99% in this particular environment. Chair, there was also a question on VIP protection allocation. I must indicate, Chair, that VIP protection services falls within Program 5, Protection and Security Services Program. This particular program provides for protection and security services to all entities or identified dignitaries in government interest. And compensation is a prominent element for all protection security services with a significant overtime cost in this regard. So the small increase that you will see on this particular program is as a result of the PSCBC agreement allocation that is also for this particular program. In terms of underspending, Chairperson, the underspending was 98% on earmarked or specifically allocated funding in the main DCCY CJS environment, which is in forensic services as well as IT. You, Chairperson, we have dependencies in the form of third parties such as CETA. There were a number of projects and contracts that were still not concluded that the department was attending to with CETA at the end of the financial year. I must just indicate that as at 31 March, we had pushed and tried to pay all the invoices that were on the system, but those procurement processes that were not concluded between the department and CETA had an impact on us utilizing those specific allocated funding. Within SSL as well, there were deliveries that were not made. We had worked hard with supply chain management to put contract in place, and orders were issued at the end of the financial year. Deliveries were not yet made due to lead times that took time within this SSL environment. Some of their equipment is specialized in nature, and it took time for service providers to deliver those particular equipment. There are details that could be provided, Chairperson. So we had in the main on the ICJS and the rollover funding that affected us in terms of underspending. There was also slight impact on the COE. We had slight deviations on concluding of HR processes. We also had slight deviations on anticipated number of personnel losses that affected that 0.3 underspending on compensation of employees, and also slight deviation on timing of personnel losses as indicated, Chairperson. We strive to ensure that we put system in place to monitor and ensure that this budget is spent, but we are affected as indicated on most of the CMAC funding by our third parties processes, where we rely on other institutions to put procurement processes or procurement vehicles in place. In terms of division visible policing, the spending there was 99.99%. There was a small amount that was left behind with crime intelligence with a 0.4% underspending in this regard. Thank you, Chair. I think I've covered all. HR will then cover on the other issues of the age profiles as well as the impact on the numbers as per the COE reductions in the previous MTEs. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. And may we move, with your permission, to TMS, Major General Edith Mavunla.
Yes, sir, General Khan.
Chair?
Yes, then, and who's the next speaker?
Chair, the next response will come from Major General Mavunla from our TMS environment in respect of one of your questions relating to our progress as far as digitization is concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. The members of the committee, the National Commissioner, and all the Lieutenant Generals. I hope I'm audible. The question was, has SAPS begun to digitize some information to be stored by SAPS, for example, the fingerprint record? Our response would be, SAPS is in a transformational journey to transform itself into the modernization and improved focus that is prioritizing digitization capabilities in SAPS. Having said that, SAPS does recognize the digitization in government services while transformation into inclusive digitization is being a priority. Why we say so? Because we do have services specifically in the fingerprints that have been cited, services for example, criminal records and also security clearances, which are being provided out there, of which such information we are linked with Home Affairs in conducting such records. In saying so, we are recognizing that it's not something that will happen overnight to do digitization in SAPS. This is the reason that we say we are in a transformation to prioritize those services that are specific to SAPS to start the digitization. But at the same time, we are improving on those services that we already have, which we are mandated to keep the records on. And with the challenges that we are citing in the third party with the procurement related to the network improvement, we do have a challenge of the aging infrastructure. And with the infrastructure aging, we have to enable and transform, refresh the infrastructure, that the infrastructure is ready for the digitization of those services. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, Chair, I omitted to also indicate that the HR environment will come in insofar as our turnover rate is concerned, as well as the related question. Thank you, Chair. It would be Major General Tema.
Major General Tema, please come in. We don't have time.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, our minister and committee members, and our national commissioner and all generals present, colleagues. From our declining workforce, we do agree that over the period of 5 years, there is a notable decline in the workforce. The decline is at about 8.8%. And most of the losses that you are seeing within the organization are coming from the administration program, followed by the VISPOL program. The admin is at 11.7% and VISPOL is at 9%. The reasons for members mainly exiting the organization is through retirement, and also those who are pursuing better opportunities outside the organization, and also a higher number based on ill health and retirements. Then the other question on the age profile of the SAPS workforce, the higher concentration of employees are falling within the age group of 25 to 49 years of age, which is still acceptable for members to be able to actively engage and combat crime. The new recruits are mainly around the ages of 19 to 24 years of age, which then assist in complementing the group that has been mentioned before. There was a gap that was realized in the previous year because there was no intake of the new entry levels, which are bringing a younger population into the organization. But currently, we are still trying to have that balance between those younger ones that are agile on the ground and the skilled, experienced ones that are focusing on the detection part of it. Then on the recruitment strategy that seem not to be active in rural areas. SAPS is using different forms of measures in order to reach out to the different settings within the country. We are advertising once we have a recruitment drive, we are advertising in major newspapers and also on our website. And then we further convene local imbizos in the rural areas that are usually facilitated by traditional leaders. And in all our provinces, the provincial offices will identify the local newspapers wherein would put the adverts for members to be able to see and respond to that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, I will now hand over to my National Commissioner, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. General Jingo will follow on detective-related questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair. Honorable members, the DM, National Commissioner, and the colleagues in the platform, I'm going to focus on the first question that was asked on the gender-based violence cases, the time frame on rape cases. There is no time frame. We prioritize all the gender-based violent cases. It can be under 72 hours if we got our suspect. But if the suspect is arrested, I just want to emphasize the issue of DNA at test results. It takes 35 days, working days, turnaround to get the DNA for the suspect. And also what we are doing, we have prioritized all the GBV cases, specifically on rape. We've got a project that is running with NPA since last year, June 2021. Since we started that project, we have submitted 8,412 cases that have been postponed by the courts to be prioritized. Out of those, I think this is a good story to tell, 519 they were identified as the serial offenders in rape cases or murder cases. So it shows that when the case is postponed, the NPA is sending that request to us to prioritize that case. Then in the next court date, the case is prioritized. And it can also be seen on the results of the FCS on the conviction rate that can be submitted if it's needed. So that means we are prioritizing all the gender-based violence cases. On the issue of enough stock of FCS, of the rape cases, I don't think that is the case. All the contracts are in place. We are getting weekly the reports from the provinces. We have got enough stock in all the stores. Maybe in this case, those keys are not kept in each and every station. The keys are being kept at accounting stations because the stations do not use the crime keys. They are used by the FCS members. When they come to the station for a case, they come with their kit already. So we don't keep a crime keys in the CSC because if you keep them there, then they would expire. So it's better to keep them in one place and in the accounting station. Then the FCS are getting their kits from the accounting station to make sure that they do have. But currently, all provinces are enough. The latest report that we got last Friday, it shows that we've got enough kids in the stalls. The other question that I think I must just talk to it is the capacitation of the crime intelligence. As the National Commissioner has alluded, we are currently busy capacitating the crime intelligence. Currently, there are 836 post promotions that we have been advertised. We have advertised also 102 posts for security guards, 23 for handymen, and also 86 for intelligence analysis and coordination. At the level of kennels, we have advertised 80 posts. General workers, we have advertised already. The interviews were done. We are just waiting for the process to be finalized. And also the polygraph members, that the posts that were advertised, 11 posts, they are already in process. And also 19 SMS at the brigadier level, they are in process. We'll be starting with our interviews for the next coming week by the beginning of June. All those, they will be taking up their posts. So we are busy capacitating crime intelligence. Coming into the issues of cross-border, specifically that side of Emangwizi, crime intelligence do run undercover projects there and network projects in those areas. Or it's actually, it's not only the area of Emangwizi. We in all areas we've got cross-border with other countries, we do have sub-cooperations that are running in the form of a bilateral or in the sub-coast space. We recover the vehicles, but the problem is the repatriation of the vehicles due to different laws of the different countries. You might find that you've got a lot of cars that were repatriated in Lesotho or in Mozambique, but the problem is to get those vehicles back home. But we are working on those through our sub-cooperation in our operations. I think I have covered those areas that were needed, the areas of the detectives. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. General here on financial inflows, and General Zulu on the colleges. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, the Deputy Minister, the National Commissioner, and my colleagues. Firstly, with regard to the issue of the impact on the personnel that are leaving the organization, we also feel it as the DPCI, as we are currently sitting at 50% of our establishment. The fact that we have lost more than 529 in the past 3 years is a challenge. And then some of this personnel apply for greater pastures, both within the greater service and outside the greater service. We can just indicate that last financial year, we lost 48 who left the DPCI to go and join the greater SAPS for the purpose of growth. So it means that this leaves us with a personnel that are carrying overload of work. As we speak, 1,500 investigators are expected to carry 22,000 cases, of which 13,000 accused persons are at court. So those who are leaving the organization, there is an impact on those that are left behind. With regard to the issue of illegal mining, my colleagues have already attended to it, but I just needed to indicate that we also run some of the projects and the like. And in the last financial year, the DPCI secured 342 accused persons in court. Coming to the question of illicit financial flows, in all of the investigation that we conduct, we always look at the financial flows, those that are being taken out of the country and those that are laundered within the country. So in most of what we do, we can also observe some of the arrests at the various ports of entry. This is but the work that we do it with other role players such as the South African Revenue Service that are also operating at the ports of entry. So those, I think, are the questions that have been directed at the DPCI. I will leave it there for now. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
General Zulu,
thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Members, for this particular opportunity, and National Commissioner, Deputy Minister. I will be responding in session regarding the Tshwane Academy in terms of the status, especially when it we look at the videos that was circulating, which shows the status, which most of the pictures were taken during the COVID-19. As we know that during COVID-19, most of the our academies, they were not full staffed because we depend on the training. Forming the Tshwane Academy in terms of the SAPS infrastructure maintenance plan for 2022-2023, which the contractors now are preparing the, I mean, to renovate those particular building blocks. And I must say that
number
recording in progress.
Come back in writing because I think we might know some other areas, some will not be detailed, so we'll send it in writing. And also the question on the GPV desk. As we do audit, we'll come back to see what have we found in terms of our auditing. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair, for that. I think that is the response that we create a picture that shows that there are no challenges. We are at 100%. We are running at 100% of subs. Challenges are there, but there is determination on the side of the leadership to ensure that we deal with the environment that we are confronted with. And we are also responding appropriately to the areas that members have spoken to, the issues of illicit mining and other related who also hijack construction sites. But we are also mindful of the role that respective government department must play, and also different levels of government, local government, municipalities, and national government. Some of the problems where you have tensions in communities around conforming to the policies and prescripts that have been defined
in terms of what you we need to do. It is important that communities are taken on board, they participate even before the actual construction takes place, so that they ready themselves as a community to participate in the construction and be able to provide the necessary services and benefit from those opportunities that government have created. So in most cases, you find that contractors just walk into a community and start constructing a road or a police station without communities participating. And as a result, they protest because they believe they can make a contribution. So if we can all respond appropriately to that element, it will in a way mitigate against this protest. I'm not saying that there are no criminal elements that take advantage of this situation. They are there, but we must also play our roles as government to ensure that this doesn't happen. South African police are ready to respond to the challenges that we're confronted with, and we have no doubt that we have got the capable leadership led by General Masemola and Minister Kele in this space to deal with the challenges before us. But thanks very much for giving us this opportunity to appear before you and account on how we are going to utilize the resources and the things that you have raised or you have observed, like the issue of the GBV desk that was spoken to. I fully agree with the National Commissioner that we'll have to come back to you. We can't come here and report things that don't exist. But we also are of the view that members of parliament, because they have constituencies, you sometimes have first-hand information around issues we are talking to or we are dealing with. And through the collaboration between the department and yourselves, we can respond appropriately to the observations that you are making, and we'll make an appeal to members of parliament that where you make certain observations, our doors are open. We'll be contacted from the minister to the police station commander. And if you have difficulties, as we can only work better and do more by collaborating with public representatives and society in general. Thank you. Thank you so much, at DM and the National Commissioner for the engagement. There is no doubt that the challenges that SEPs is having, they are not just SEPs challenges. They affect other departments, but they are also our challenges in many ways. That's why DM would always have this thing that, tell us about any other legislation that perhaps may help you to be able to better perform your responsibilities. You are talking to lawmakers, so we take a view that there shouldn't be any law which impedes a performance of the department or department of government, because at the end of the day, those are our laws. We make those laws. So that's very important. But we thank you, DM, and the full bench team for engaging with the committee. I would like to give you some backdrops as you as you leave the meeting. I think the era of responding to some of these criminal activities, I think sometimes it takes too long. I'll make an example, for instance, the way that a Prasa infrastructure was being dismantled in 2020 during the lockdown. There were videos which were going all over, and broad daylight, those things were happening, and we could see that infrastructure being taken down brick by brick, piece by piece, broad daylight. Everybody was there, but police were not there, and it started somewhere, and people soon realized that no, we can get away with this one. So I'm talking about the speed and the agility of responding to this thing. I think it's something that definitely you need to attend to. I think one of the other members also alluded to the July unrest again, that it always helps to nip some of these things in the bud before they get lives of their own. The question of Dinelle and yourselves, I think there's a commissioner, please follow up on that one. For me, I here in this committee, we have dealt with a lot of exemptions from given by National Treasury on other departments. I don't have all the details around this, but I think that if there's a legislation which stops you from getting what you want to get from Dinelle, while we're all trying to make it work, it's an issue that needs further engagement, Commissioner, because that talks to economic growth. That talks
we lost
to
you, Chair.
Hello.
We can hear you. We lost you when you were still talking about the issues that you deal with on exemptions around enrollment.
Okay, thank you, DM, for raising. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can, Chair.
Okay, please shout if anything happens a little bit because of connectivity. No, I was saying that as this committee, we do get things where there are exemptions, they call them deviations, and they get presented to us here in this committee. So I'm saying that where we must save this very important and strategic institution, I don't think that we should be prevented by those, as long as we go through the channel. So would like a situation where you continue engaging with the National Treasury. I think from our side, we find a way of engaging with National Treasury too. Another area which I think we would need further information on, DM, is the question of vehicles being found on the other side of the border, but it becomes difficult to bring those things. It becomes an incentive for people to steal. So again, I think with DECO and so on, would like to know exactly what is happening around that matter, because problems should be resolved, and if the committee should be kept in the loop. Lastly, it's very clear as we interact that there are issues which must be resolved between yourselves and DPWCI, and which impact on service delivery. Again, it's executive DM. Let these things not drag. Things amongst ourselves as government, they should be resolved ASAP, so that we are able to proceed with service delivery unhindered. It's always an issue with us when matters amongst executives drag on and drag on and drag on, because you sit in same committees, you sit in the same executive, same cabinet, and we don't understand why those things are not being resolved. So where there are political DM, we definitely would urge that there should be some urgent intervention, because we don't want these things to be cited as hindrances and the hurdles to service delivery to our people. With those words, again, I said it's your part, course, and where you need to come back to us, please do that. And this is a process as far as we're concerned. It's not just an event. We still hope to meet, and all of the best. We are appreciative of the challenges that you are having as you deal with this the question of keeping our country safe and dealing with issues of crime. Thank you very much. This takes care of this agenda item. You are free to stay in the meeting, but I guess there's a lot of work to be done outside. You are excused. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We will disconnect because we must also appear in another engagement immediately after this. But thanks very much. We really appreciate this, and we took note of the issues that you have raised with us that we should attend to. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, TM and your team. Honorable members, let's go to the next agenda item. We want to deal with the minutes today. I want to check with Darren whether we do have any announcements.
Chairperson, yes. We received an apology from Mr. Zolam Nzana. He was unable to connect to the meeting. And then that was after we've read out the apologies. And next week, we've got three meetings, Chairperson. On Tuesday, we are meeting with Water and Sanitation. Wednesday, we are meeting with Employment and Labor. And on Friday next week, we are meeting with the Department of Social Development. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, thank you very much. This takes us to the end of this meeting, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good weekend to you as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Thanks, Chairperson.
Thanks, guys. Musa.
Yes, Chair. Have a great weekend.
Have a good one too, and your colleagues.